Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. It was a pleasure to be here. Before I get off, like, I don't also want to forget that Taylor Whitmer is running for a state Supreme Court in Washington State. And so she serves on our Supreme Court, but this is her first election. And so she'd be the first Black woman to be elected to the Supreme Court. So shout out to Justice Whitmer and all the other Black women running on the Supreme in Washington State. And so to be in conversation with y'all. And I can't wait to see y'all soon.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for all you do.
Let me just make the closing announcement. The Coalition of Black Failures, we meet second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. And since the coronavirus, we have suspended face-to-face meetings, so we are utilizing Google Hangouts to conduct our meeting. So our next meeting will be held November the 10th, 2020. And our email address is rcbtu10@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. So join us in our evolving adventure, representing Black union workers. And I just want to add that we again will be passing out without the best flyers at Safeway, Martin Luther King, and Popeyes on Saturday. Did it last Saturday. And we will be doing it again this weekend. So you come and join us. Meet us there while we continue to encourage people to get out the vote.
All right.
All right.
Well, so we're going to call it a night, and I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in to Black Girl Magic and Politics, and holla!
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Personnel Committee meets on the second Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we are talking to a cross-section of folks who are working on abolition and issues related to decarceration. And we've got these folks together through the Siskiyou Abolition Project. The folks that we're talking to tonight, Rose, Kaya, Rory, and Ducky, represent a sampling of folks who are doing abolition work across the Pacific Northwest. The intention of this show tonight is to have kind of a broad-ranging conversation about what's going on in the abolition movement and what's happening here in the Northwest at this time. So I'd like to start by talking to each of our guests individually and kind of asking them about projects that they're involved in. And I'd like to start with Kaya. And Kaya uses they, she pronouns. Kaya, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Kaya, can you tell me a little bit about the work that you do and the organization that you might represent?
Yeah, so I organize with Black and Pink PDX, which is a chapter of the larger national organization Black and Pink. our Portland chapter formed about a year and a half ago, and Black and Pink's goal is to support LGBTQ and HIV positive people who are incarcerated, primarily through a pen pal program. So here in Portland, we have monthly meetings where we match outside people with our inside members who are looking for pen pals. And then we also have a couple ongoing projects on the side, but that's really the heart of what we do.
How does queerness affect a person's incarceration? Is it an added level of hindrance to their, you know, having any kind of like authentic experience of, you know, being heard and accurately, like, you know, being received of services and communicating with the outside? How does queerness affect a person when they're incarcerated? And what does your work do to help, you know, kind of ease some of the problems of incarceration?
Well, I think like you started to speak to, queerness adds another layer of oppression, particularly to people who are incarcerated. They often face not only violence from guards, but also from other people who might be incarcerated. Some people don't feel comfortable being authentic with who they are in terms of their gender, their sexuality, while they're incarcerated because of heightened levels of violence. And often, as we all know, many LGBTQ people are rejected by their families or ostracized and don't have the same familial support that other people might have, which is especially hard for someone who goes to prison and then really relies on that family support to fight the isolation of being incarcerated. So that's where Black and Pink comes in, providing a pen pal relationships where people can be their authentic selves and know that they will be supported and seen and respected in their entire identity. And then also just providing a link to the outside world for people who might not have one otherwise. And of course, queerness is just one identity that intersects with others to make the prison experience increasingly violent.
Thank you. I'm going to come back to you in just a minute, Kaya, but I do want to make sure to introduce our other panelists tonight. Our next panelist is Rory, and Rory uses she, her pronouns. Rory, can you tell us a little bit about the work that you do and organizations that you might represent?
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm an organizer with the Critical Resistance Chapter here in Portland. The Critical Resistance Chapter in Portland was founded around 6 or 7 years ago. Currently, we are running a campaign called Write Them All, which works to write every single person imprisoned in state prisons across Oregon, which is around 14,500 people. And that's been a really amazing project, and anyone can plug in at any time. It's the Write Them All campaign, and you can find us on Instagram at Critical Resistance PDX if you want to plug in. Critical Resistance generally is a 20-year strong organization based in Oakland with national chapters in Portland, New York, Oakland, and LA.
Critical Resistance just has an amazing reputation as a, you know, an organization for representing abolition and decarceration. What are some of the things that Critical Resistance in Portland has been doing this summer?
This summer, a lot of our organizing has centered around the Write Them All campaign. We launched at the beginning. We had formulated this idea pre-COVID, and once COVID hit, we realized that this would be the perfect and most necessary time out of all the necessary and perfect times to really fight the isolation of imprisonment. So that's been a very real part of our organizing. Of course, Care Not Cops, which was launched by Critical Resistance around 4 years ago this summer, has been working in its usual capacity around defunding the police here in Portland. And we have gotten some incredible wins, including our campaign goal of abolishing the GVRT, which is the Gun Violence Reduction Team, previously named the Gang Enforcement Team, functions stayed the same, and reducing millions of dollars to the local police department.
Thank you. Our next panelist that I would like to introduce is Rose, and Rose uses she or her pronouns. And Rose, can you tell us about some of the organizations that you, or organization that you might represent?
Yeah, I work with a few organizations. I'm based out of Seattle, which is occupied Coast Salish territory. Just want to honor the original peoples of the land I'm on, name that. I have been part of the NONI Youth Jail movement in Seattle since that started several years ago. Right now, I'm working with Free Them All Washington, which is a coalition of different organizers, family members, people who have loved ones incarcerated, and abolitionists who are fighting from the inside out to get folks free, especially during this COVID time. I also have someone I love very dearly who's incarcerated in Oregon, so I started to connect with abolitionists there after he initiated a hunger strike based on the conditions in solitary confinement. He went to solitary confinement the same day that they had their first COVID case, which then subsequently we've seen several deaths in prison, which is Eastern Oregon Correctional Institute. But yeah, just long-term organizing to destroy prisons, building with whoever's on that same page. Being an abolitionist for me, meaning prisons are part of this larger network. So abolition doesn't just mean prisons or the police, it also means the colonial state and all these systems of violence that harm Black, Brown, Native, queer, and people who are labeled as other in our society.
Thank you. And our final panelist that we have tonight is Ducky. And Ducky is with the Siskiyou Abolition. And Ducky uses they, she pronouns. Ducky, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the work that you do?
Certainly. First off, thank you so much for having myself and for having all of us on the program. I'm really excited to see where this conversation takes us. So as you mentioned, I work on the local and regional level with a group called Siskiyou Abolition Project, which is located in so-called Southern Oregon on stolen Tecubitete and Tequelma land. And I also work on the national level with a group called the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons, which uses the framework of toxicity as a way of understanding how prison systems operate, and was rooted in a need to support earth and animal liberation prisoners coming out of that movement and the government repression that that movement faced in the mid-late 2000s, but has transitioned into being full-scale abolition and, tear it all down so we can build up the world that we want to see in its stead. So with Fight Toxic Prisons, we've done a lot of different things, ranging from working to stop prison construction on former mountaintop removal sites to fighting environmental degradation as it has really terrible and debilitating physical impacts on incarcerated populations, as well as just kind of working to generally link the struggles of environmental justice to prison abolition. And with Siskiyou Abolition Project, we're a fairly recently formed group. We started in response to the COVID outbreaks across this continent as a way to support people across Oregon, people in Oregon prisons who are dealing with COVID.
Thank you, Ducky. To start our conversation tonight, I'd like to start by discussing the incredibly sad news that you may or may not have heard about just in the last couple of hours. Up in Vancouver, Washington, about 3 hours ago, Kevin Peterson was murdered by the police. Kevin Peterson is a 21-year-old Black man, a father, and he was talking to his partner at the time when police shot and killed him. They claimed that he had a weapon on him, but it's not clear that he did have a weapon or that he fired a weapon, but he was shot and killed by the police just about 3 hours ago. And this is just the latest in a long string of police murders of Black and Brown men. And I'd like us to start by, first of all, remembering Kevin Peterson and his wife and his child. If anyone has anything that they'd like to share about this murder that has just happened in our area, this is a great time to speak or to address the issue of police violence against Black and Brown men. If anyone would like to jump in on that conversation, otherwise I will move on to something else. But I did need to acknowledge that to start. Would anyone care to comment on the murder of Kevin Peterson that just happened about 3 hours ago?
I don't think I have adequate words to express how horrifying and tragic his murder was last night. I know that everyone is mourning and tired of mourning for so long, and I'll leave it at that for now.
It's tragic. I just heard the news today. And yeah, I think it's another example of why resisting police violence is so crucial in our organizations, where we know that we cannot separate police violence from the violence of institutions of imprisonment. We really need to be working on both fronts and acknowledging both fronts and surveillance, right? Like these are completely interconnected and therefore dubbed, you know, the prison industrial complex, right? And I think it's tragedy, and it's a long line of violence in the Pacific Northwest, in Oregon specifically, as being so close to Oregon, to maintain white supremacy, right? And as the new South, and we have to look at this violence as really a legacy of brutality, white settler colonialism, right? Like anti-blackness and ground that the work is here and everywhere, right? Like, I think it's really important for us as organizers in Portland and organizers in Washington and organizers in Southern Oregon is like, yeah, there's places that where violence is happening that like there isn't like a large metro population, right? There's not like maybe like a like anti-policing campaigns and really trying to build these connections. It's like solidarity to resist police violence. So sending prayers to the family and all the loved ones.
Thank you. That was Rory. Would anyone else care? Rose, would you care to comment?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, sending prayers to the family and to everyone who's harmed by that act of violence, by that murder. Also wanting to elevate the voice of the elder that called right before we got started recording. When I was asking him while I was muted, if he wanted to share anything, he was like, oh, I just want to talk about being buried alive, you know? So, and other people inside have shared the sentiment about how police violence is connected to the violence against those inside. There's obviously, they're their own thing entirely, but as a loved one inside put it, he said, we're what happens when you survive. You know, when you survive that police violence, the outcome is prison. So in some ways people will feel fortunate that they survived, but they survive only to be abused by the state, right? So I just want to put that out there. And then also take a moment to acknowledge the lives that have been taken by the Oregon Department of Corrections, by their failure to release people when they know that that's necessary. They've acknowledged it's necessary to have a 40% reduction. There's a specific person I would like to elevate's name, Warren Hill. He was a Black elder at Eastern Oregon Correctional Institute. I'm told that when he was younger, he was part of the Black Panther Party. And he died on August 26th of this year due to COVID. So I just take a moment to think about how those deaths are related, how that is the same struggle. So as we fight to keep that in mind and to continue to lift up their names, their loved ones, and...
Thank you. Would anyone else care to speak about the murder of Kevin Peterson? Okay, we'll move on then, but we're going to hold his memory, and we'll be talking about this more on Prison Pipeline, and I'm sure you'll be hearing about it in the news as the people resist police murders of Black men in our community. One of the reasons that we pulled this panel together today was because we have this disease, COVID, which has been moving through all of our communities, but it's been affecting people incarcerated especially hard. Recently in California, there was a kind of a, it's not a Pyrrhic victory, but a kind of victory down in San Quentin, where there's been a struggle to try to decarcerate San Quentin, at least to levels that are sustainable for people who are enduring COVID. Here in Oregon, the OJRC and many other organizations, including I know Critical Resistance and other groups that we are all familiar with, have worked on fighting the prison system here, ODOC, which has done very little to address COVID and basically has let people just stay incarcerated and die and getting this disease. So we wanted to spend the last few minutes of the program today talking about COVID and your work with your various organizations and how you're responding to COVID and what you're doing about COVID, how you're advocating for folks who are incarcerated, and what we can do to, kind of get over this hill of ODOC and these institutions that basically want to just let people die in prison, giving them a death sentence for just for being incarcerated. So would anyone care to talk about their organizations and their response to this COVID crisis within the prison system?
Like I said during my introduction, Siskiyou Abolition Project started in response to COVID outbreaks across the continent. And our original intention was to set up a hotline project so that incarcerated folks would be able to call in and update and report COVID cases, because we knew from the offset that we weren't going to be able to trust the DOC in terms of accurate and up-to-date reporting about COVID within the prison system. That project quickly turned out biting off a little bit more than we could chew. And so we transitioned to doing a questionnaire model and just really working to try and establish contact with folks inside and start to figure out what was actually going on behind the walls. Some of the work that has come out of that has been both through Siskiyou Abolition Project and through this like broader network of folks working towards abolition in Oregon. We have started to support folks that were on hunger strikes across the state, and we've also started to work with them to put some pressure on ODOC and on Kate Brown to initiate a whole series of mass releases. And we actually had a list of demands that were concurrent with demands coming from folks on the inside. I don't have those demands in front of me right now.
We'll put it in the show notes. We have made sure to include those demands in a previous show. So thank you so much. Kaya, would you care to comment on how your organization is dealing with addressing the COVID crisis in Oregon prisons?
Yeah, similar to Right Them All, we've just been, the campaign that Rory was mentioning with Critical Resistance, we've been getting a lot of letters from people inside who are just absolutely being treated terribly. There are not adequate protections happening. People know that if they do test positive, they won't be treated well and will likely be put into segregation. And so they're terrified to even get tested for COVID. And it's just been really, really horrifying hearing from our inside folks. Some of us were also involved with supporting some of the strikers at the MCDC jail, which is the jail inside the so-called Justice Center in downtown Portland. And folks there were striking, doing a food strike because of the terrible conditions, guards not wearing masks, that sort of thing. And as Ducky was mentioning, Lane County Mutual Aid did a lot of support for folks in Lane County jails doing hunger strikes as well.
Rory, I know that you have to go pretty soon. Would you care to just address the COVID crisis and how Critical Resistance has been responding to the COVID crisis in Oregon's prisons?
Yeah, thank you. So I think March 15th is when stuff in Oregon really like hit the fan, right? And we like realized how deadly and how serious COVID-19 was. Critical Resistance, Care Not Cops, we worked with organizers from Surge, Oregon Day for the People, Never Again Action Group to stage car caravans, which we're seeing pop up across the country. We're very excited about car caravans that were taking place in Chicago. So we had a list of demands, a lot of them very central to demands that have come out across the US. So like reducing prison population immediately by 50%, releasing all people over 50, and trying to get all these different areas where we know people need to be released immediately to save their lives and also chip away at the enormous prison population. So we staged our first demonstration car caravan at OSP, which is Oregon State Penitentiary, I believe in early April. And then we coordinated another strike on May Day in front of the so-called Justice Center where MCDC sits. And then the budget cycle hit, right? So we kind of like pulled into our budget cycle yearly thing. And then George Floyd was murdered. And across the country, defunding the police became a very huge thing. So that kind of became our very, very centralized focus. But all the while, Right the Mall was launched. And that project has really been crucial to hearing what is going on inside prisons right now. We are getting tons and tons of responses. I think we've gotten 9,000 letters out at this point. I can double check that. But yeah, that has been something very huge to maintain connection with people inside. I had coordinated with some folks in Lane County. I think they're inspired by our car caravans and they stage one. And I think that's where a lot of the origins of the Lane County Hunger Strike solidarity came into play. So I think there was like a lot of beautiful blossoming of resistance happening that we all were watching each other do and really like connected. So that leads us kind of here where we
I do want to give Rose a chance to briefly address how you're dealing with the COVID crisis, and then we're gonna have to go right into contact, how people can contact you and if you're having any upcoming activities. So Rose, would you like to briefly address how your organizations are dealing with COVID?
Yeah, so for Free Them All Washington, we're pretty well organized on many fronts, having direct action, protests, having next week, we actually have a family meeting for people who have loved ones incarcerated. I can give you the Zoom link for that if you want to share that. We have a lot going on today. We even we're at someone's resentencing hearing to show support. We're really well organized up here. Since COVID started, it has hit Oregon prisons harder than up in Washington, despite the fact that Oregon Department of Corrections acknowledges they need to reduce the population by 40%, which is not something Washington would ever acknowledge. Because then there would be a lot of pressure on the governor to release people. Somehow, Governor Kate Brown doesn't seem to care that it's already been said that they need to reduce the population. So I've been focusing a lot on trying to build with family members, especially at Eastern Oregon Correctional Institute. There has been a lot of retaliation for actions that happened. A lot of family members are concerned about being involved with organizing because their loved ones are facing retaliation. So in a lot of ways, the work there has been really stifled. So at this point, it's just like riding out the storm in terms of trying to communicate as much as possible with loved ones through letters because they're not having access to the phones. So just keeping up pressure on Kate Brown, trying to spread that through all the networks, making sure that she knows that our loved ones' lives are in her hands. And if she fails to act, more people will die. As someone who, I did actually recently graduate from law school, so I've spent a lot of time studying what the standard for murder is that would qualify if she wasn't the governor as like under murder. So it's actually literally murder that she's doing right now by refusing to take action when she has the responsibility to do so.
Thank you so much. Rose, how can people reach you or get in contact with organizations that you support?
Right now, Free Them All Washington has an Instagram. In terms of family connections, there are some family pages. If you're a family member in Oregon, Oregon Prison Families, if you get on there, you do have to verify your loved one. You could follow Free Them All Oregon on Twitter.
Rory, how can people get in touch with you or with Critical Resistance?
Yeah, anyone can email Critical Resistance at CRPDX@criticalresistance.org. We're also Critical Resistance PDX on Instagram and Twitter if you want to follow. And you can write to us at Critical Resistance Portland, P.O. Box 11055, Portland, Oregon 97211.
Thank you. Ducky, how can people get in touch with Siskiyou Abolition?
Folks can reach us. We're on Instagram at Siskiyou Abolition Project. We're on Twitter at Project Siskiyou. We're on Facebook as Siskiyou Abolition Project. And folks can also reach us via email at siskiyouabolition@protonmail.com. And for folks who are wondering, Siskiyou is spelled S-I-S-K-I-Y-O-W.
Thank you. And Kaya, how can people get in touch with Black and Pink?
People can follow us on Instagram or Twitter at blackandpinkpdx. And you can also shoot us an email at blackandpinkpdx@gmail.com. We have open meetings on the second Thursday of every month that happen by Zoom. And anyone is welcome to come. You can come get signed up for a pen pal, or you can come if you're interested in more long-term organizing with us.
Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us tonight on Prison Pipeline. And again, I do invite each one of you individually to come back and join us for a full half hour show. Thank you so much and have a good evening.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Free them all.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Thank you, baby.